Yes, we are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It's called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. John Wall doesn't need no introduction. It's an insider's look at the NBA and culture surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick of the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts. There's a new way to bet on things outside of sports with Kalshi. Maybe you thought on the future of TikTok. Will Congress ban it? Or won't they? Will Taylor Swift's album win Album of the Year? Will Biden's approval rating go up? Will it go down? Or inflation? You can trade futures on all of that and make money if you're correct. You're smart. You know things. Bet on it. $20 bonus if you go to Kalshi.com/stereo. Spelled K-A-L-S-H-I and deposit $50. Kalshi.com/stereo. Get in the game. There is no guarantee of performance. An investor could lose their entire investment. Investment fees. iHeartMedia does not recommend any investments. See further disclosures at Kalshi.com.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
Have No Fear, the I Am Rappaport Stereo Podcast is here. Boom! Have No Fear, the I Am Rappaport Stereo Podcast is here. On today's banging, brand new, museum quality I Am Rappaport Stereo Podcast, I have a gentleman named Lee Kern. Who the fuck is Lee Kern? Well, I found out about him. I saw a video that he did post October 7th. Very, very articulate, very funny, even in dark times, about everything that's going on in Israel. And we reached out to him. He turns out that Lee is also an Oscar-nominated writer for Borat 2 with Sacha Baron Cohen and Who is America, which was on Showtime. He's an interesting guy. He's an artist. He's British. He's a shit talker. He says fuck shit and motherfucker in a way that makes me laugh. This is an excellent, hard-hitting, shit-talking I Am Rappaport Stereo Podcast coming up right now. Miles Jordan, a.k.a. the Bleach Brothers, a.k.a. the Dust Brothers, start this puppy off with something real nice. Start this puppy off with something real loud. But most importantly, start this I Am Rappaport Stereo Podcast off with something real funky.
Just a quick one. Fucking media. Fucking journalists. All your fucking interviews saying, Israel, why aren't you doing this? Israel, you should do that. Israel, what about the civilians? Israel, what about humanitarian this, that and the other? You're all full of shit. From your fucking bones to your guts to your fucking capillaries and your fingers. You're full of shit. There's only one moral humanitarian question to be asked right now, which is Hamas. When will you release the hostages? Release the hostages. This is what started this war. This is why there's humanitarian concerns. Hamas went into Israel and fucking killed these children's parents in front of them and then stole screaming, crying children into Gaza. And they're being held hostage there. So there's only one question that should be asking from morning till night and from night until morning is Hamas, when will you release these children? Release the hostages. Why is the media not asking that? If they put in half the effort being as robust, asking these Palestinian Hamas supporting wankers that question as they do abusing and gaslighting and being passive aggressive to Israelis who have to do something to defend themselves against people who want to exterminate them. If the BBC journalists and Sky journalists had any shame. These Western hypocrites, smug, sanctimonious, privileged, safe, passive-aggressive wankers. There's only one question that should be said in anyone's lip, and it should be a demand. Release the fucking hostages. Hamas should release these babies and children they've kidnapped. There's no other moral discussion to be had right now. Anyone else who misdirects away from that or avoids it or omits it, they're a fucking wanker. Everything that pours out of their mouth henceforth is just a big fucking turd.
I am Rapport Stereo Podcast with Lee Kern. Lee Kern, who I didn't know your name. I didn't know who you were until 2.5 weeks ago. I mean, I've learned a lot in the last 2.5 weeks personally. I really have learned a lot. And I've learned about you because I saw you ranting on social media in a way that stuck out to me. I didn't know that you were a writer. I didn't know that you were a Oscar-nominated writer. I didn't know that you had anything to do with Borat 2 or Who is America. I just was taken by the way you articulate yourself. I was taken with your humor. I was taken with your preciseness in the way you articulate yourself. And just seeing a fair-skinned, bald, British accent, you know, be so articulate and so passionately articulate about everything that's going on in Israel right now and in the Gaza Strip right now. And also your tweets. I just was like, who the fuck is this guy? So I appreciate you coming to the podcast. And just before we get into the Israel of it all, who are you? What is your background? Like I said, you were nominated for an Oscar for Borat 2. You are one of the one of the writers or creators, correct me if I'm wrong, of the Showtime show Who is America with Sacha Baron Cohen, which, you know, came out during the pandemic, I believe. And, you know, everybody loves everything Borat and all that stuff. It, you know, it's just stuff that's so entertaining, especially that during the pandemic was, I mean, it was like you guys, Tiger King, the Michael Jordan documentary. And like for me, it was like some reality TV. So, you know, those sort of things when we were so desperate to have content to watch.
Yeah.
They stuck out. So who are you, Lee? Like, what is your background as an artist?
Well, fucking hell. So I
know it's a shitty question. I feel like I'm doing a general question, but I'm just trying to, like, you know, get people to understand who you are. And then I'll get into, you know, the specific stuff.
I'll try and be as concise as possible, blending who I am with my career. So I come from a family of East End London black taxi drivers. So my family were cab drivers, like my dad, both my grandparents, my great uncles. So I come from that world, which is probably why I swear a lot in, you know, when I'm talking, it's just in my DNA. But I'm not an idiot, you know, like that's what people think if you swear. And because my accent, I don't know, to Americans, they probably think my accent maybe sounds like I'm a gentleman, but in England, it's kind of like a gutter accent. And so in Britain, people...
Well, we mix perfectly. We mix perfectly that way.
Yeah, so people hear the accent and they feel like the class and they'll think that we're stupid, but we're not. It just means that we're just as intelligent as anyone, but we can kind of intellectually street brawl, as it were, in a way which some more genteel people can't. So I can mix the eloquence with a slightly more robust vibe. Anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. Yeah, so my dream was always to do comedy, always wanted to do comedy. But the first people that gave me my break in show business in the UK was in documentary for some reason. And I had a meeting with someone at Channel 4 in the UK. And it turns out they were from the same place I grew up. And I mentioned how I always wanted to make a film about the local crazy man who'd walk around in his underpants. And so there was this guy who just walked around in his underpants since time began. And there were all these different myths and legends about him. Like people said he was a fucking brain surgeon, that he was like, he killed all his family in a fire. He had a fucking bone disease that if he ever stopped walking, he'd like just explode, you know. And so I made this documentary to just go and find out the truth. And so that was the first thing I did. And I made more docs. And then, but I obviously wanted to veer towards comedy. And then I ended up, I never wanted to do prank comedy. You know, I'm a writer. I want to do scripted stuff. But in life, you just got to, you've got to go where the heat is, follow the opportunities that come your way, and you snake here and there, and you end up somewhere you never thought of, but maybe it's all right. And years ago, when the first prince, who was the first one, Prince William, he was getting married. And so I just pitched this idea that, of doing a prank show where I, with my fucking voice, pretended to be someone from Buckingham Palace who was organising the wedding. And so we'd prank these celebs thinking that they were going to come and, you know, put on a bit of entertainment, be guests and stuff. And, I mean, I had one celeb where they thought that they were going to announce the different courses for the dinner to all the heads of state.
Uh-huh.
And so one of them dressing up as a prawn cocktail salad. And and then making an announcement to everyone saying, your Royal Highnesses, Dukes and Duchesses, please welcome your starter, prawn cocktail. And he's like, he's dressed uh-huh. like, he looks like a prawn on a bed of lettuce.
Uh-huh.
And and we had like celebs literally signing a death warrant saying that if anyone tried to assassinate the prince at the wedding, they'd jump in front of the bullet. We had someone, we had a girl from some pop band, she's signing it, she's crying as she's signing it. And it's like, why are you fucking signing uh-huh. it? Like, you're going to die for a prawn cocktail and a fucking chicken Kiev main course, you know? And they're willing to die to be part of that. Anyway, off right. the back of that, I got a series of like 6-part series doing some really big, ambitious pranks. So just to give you an example of that. Let's say one of them was I posed as a scientist and convinced some celebs that I'd made clones of them and then actually introduced them to what they believed were their clones and actually interacting with people they thought were their clones. It's fucking madness, man. After, then, cut long story short, I know someone who, I don't know Sacha Baron Cohen, and someone got me in to do a half-day writing, no, not a half-day, full-day writing on a taster tape. And I just did a good job, kept doing a good job, hustling, and they kept having me back. And then that became Who is America? And so I went out to America and worked on that. And then I worked on Borat. And then I'm now doing, you know, my own stuff, scripted things, working on bits and pieces. So, yeah.
And so let me ask you something. In regards to the pranks and, you know, obviously the Borat 2 and the Who is America, you know, when you guys are having Bernie Sanders, when you guys are having these people, the rappers that were in Who is America, like, as much as you can tell, because there might be, you know, like, I know there's, like, respecting the genre and respecting what you do. Like, how do you get people to do the shit? Like, and how is it working? Like, is somebody communicating with him? Like, how does the whole thing, like, sort of happen? Like, you pick any skit from Who is America and tell me, like, how it works. Because that's the thing that people are like, when we're watching, we're like, what the fuck is going on here? And like, you know, people are like, you know, do you not know? Is everybody an actor? Like, how does it work?
I probably can't talk about the stuff I've done with Sasha just because of NDAs and all that crap. And I don't mm-hmm. need to get litigious and stuff. But I can tell you a bit more about the stuff I've done, which is an overlap.
Okay.
I mean, let's just say another prank I did. I did another one where I convinced some celebs that there was this rare tribe from the Amazon that their homeland was getting destroyed. And so we flew them out of the Amazon to England, and we were now housing them in a cage in a children's zoo in Cheshunt in England, right? And so we had celebs actually going into a zoo, into a cage, meeting what they believe was a rare tribe, and interacting with them, learning their customs, whilst you just got people in the zoo walking past eating ice creams. And these people having the most intense experience of their lives. I think the biggest, it's not that, the biggest thing on anyone's side is, well, why would someone lie? Why would someone go to all this effort? You don't think someone's going to build a whole world just to, like, why would someone do that? And with the clone thing I mentioned, we fucking drove them 2 hours out of London. What kind of fucking lunatics would drive someone 2 hours out of London just to make them look at a cloned penis in a jar, which I said, like, my character, basically my character was obsessed with making clones of my own penis. And I'd said, like, I'd made about 2,000 clones of it. And, and like, why would someone do that? You know what I mean? So that's the biggest thing on your site. This was all new to me, pranking. When I first had to do it, I hated it because I experienced all the symptoms of being a liar. You're looking in their eyes lying, and you feel, if you're not a psychopath, you'll feel that they can see in your soul, they know you're lying, you burn up. And then over time, you look back on footage and you realize, what was I even scared of? I could have gone further. They didn't know anything. And you get, it's quite horrible, actually, how habituated you get to just looking in people's eyes lying. It ain't healthy, you know what I mean? And
I get it.
Yeah, have you had experience doing anything in that area?
No, but I could imagine, when I've watched you guys, when I've watched, like, Johnny Knoxville and Eric Andre, I could imagine, you know, like, how you have to convince the people, and you're bullshitting with the people, and how I could imagine how it could be fucked up, because some of the people are innocent victims. Some of the people are like, good, go further, fuck them, you know, or, you know, the Rudy Giuliani's or whoever, you know, has been in, you're like, fuck them, good, look at this asshole. But even with somebody who's an asshole, you're like, you're tricking people. So I understand how it could fuck with you. So what are you doing now? Go ahead.
No, that's it. That's why I stopped doing it, because I just don't want to do that for a living. Like, I don't want to get, oh, what's my job today? I'm going to go up and just fucking lie at someone. And
I get
it. And I quite like, I want to be able to work now where there's no side, there's no angle. I'm just being honest, right. And I can be comedically truthful and, you know.
I understand.
What I'm doing now is I'm just hustling. So I don't have an agent or manager. Well, everything I've hustled, I've just done all from my own hustle, which is, that's my big flex. And
I hear you.
Yeah, I mean, Eric, like, I got to the Oscar, I didn't have an agent. I managed to get to the Oscars without an agent because it just never worked out for me. And my attitude is like, I don't need anyone's fucking permission to make a living. I'm not going to wait for someone to give me permission to live life. And so you just got to hustle and do it yourself. And just like, I've always just approached people myself. And if they act like I'm a dick about just approaching them cold, I'm like, well, fuck them. You know what I mean? And I don't want to work with them anyway. Do you know what I mean?
I totally understand what you mean. I don't know what agents, I'm sure, you know, I mean, they're probably connected to Hollywood. You know, I'm sure the agents, I think agents, however, I don't know if agents are different in London or not, or, you know, it's all connected, all goes back to Los Angeles, but I can't fucking stand them. They make me fucking sick. They make me fucking sick. They're pathetic, fucking talentless, fucking, I can't say useless because, but they're just, they look at things differently than we do from an artist's point of view. Like, simply when I look at things firstly from, as an actor. And so when my first instinct, I read a script, I'm looking at it for, as an actor. When they're reading a script, they're looking at who can they cast to get their job. I'm looking at it. They just look at things differently, you know, so it's just, you know, but they're a necessary evil, you know.
I've had an agent like about 15 years ago. It just hasn't worked. It just didn't work for me. It never got me any work, and it just always happened better when I did it myself. In terms of, I feel in America, it feels like it's a bit different. Like, if I'm honest, my instinct tells me it's just almost just like a mafia racket controlling the unions, deciding who gets to work on the dock and who doesn't. And the only reason to get an agent is just so you've got the mafia saying, yeah, let him work. And I mean, that's how it feels. Whether I'm right or not, I don't want to be too conspiratorial and dramatic, but it feels like that. I am Rappaport
Podcast. We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It's called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It's an insider's look at the NBA and culture surrounding the league. John Wall, baby, needs no introduction. Every week, the five-time NBA All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA and what's going on now in the league. CJ will bring his A-list comedian buddies to keep it light and fire off some hoop takes. Plus, John Wall will be inviting current and former NBA players, friends, and teammates to join the show to give their unfiltered accounts of what's really going on in the league from a player's perspective. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts. There's a new way to bet on things outside of sports with Kalshi. Maybe you thought on the future of TikTok. Will Congress ban it? Or won't they? Will Taylor Swift's album win Album of the Year? Will Biden's approval rating go up? Will it go down? Or inflation? You can trade futures on all of that and make money if you're correct. You're smart. You know things. Bet on it. $20 bonus if you go to Kalshi.com/stereo. Spelled K-A-L-S-H-I and deposit $50. Kalshi.com/stereo. Get in the game. There is no guarantee of performance. An investor could lose their entire investment. Investment fees. iHeartMedia does not recommend any investments. See further disclosures at Kalshi.com.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit Bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Have you been writing anything that you're excited about that you want to get going?
Yeah, I mean, no, I mean, I've always got shit going on. Like, I off the back of Borat, I sold a script to Amazon, like a feature length kind of family movie, which started off as an R-rated movie. And then I thought, you know, let me try and now do a version as a family. And I had this idea sitting for 7 years. And it's just about the idea of like, you just got to always wait for it in this career and in life in general. You have to accept that most things you ever do are going to fail, because in order for something to succeed, you need a long chain of individual links that all have to go right. And you only need one to break and it fucks up. But for something to go right, I had this idea 7 years in the waiting, and I've sort of managed to sell that. I've also, I'm working on another kids thing actually, where I illustrate as well, right? I'm an artist. And in fact, I reckon about 40% of my writing I did for Sasha was illustrations, because it just became easier for me to just visually draw the physical jokes than to write it.
How do you do, like, what do you mean? Like, for instance, what?
Okay, let's say Who's America. Do you remember the scene with that governor from Georgia who got his ass out and ran around like, trying to touch it on Sasha? Do you remember that?
Yes.
It was this racist guy. He lost his job. He was running around screaming the N-word, and like, it was just abysmal. So that there was a lot of physical comedy in that. And so I just drew the illustrations of the gags and say, this is what you do. And so I could literally show you Sasha on screen and hold up my illustrations, and it's exactly the same as that. So I had this one idea that the way to defeat a jihadist terrorist is, what is a Islamic fundamentalist most scared of in the whole world? It's gay people. And so in order to disarm a terrorist, if they're coming at you with a Kalashnikov, what you have to do is instantly drop your pants, get your ass out and fucking charge them with your butt, because they won't want it to touch them. Because if it touches them in their head, they'll think they're gay and they won't go to heaven.
Right.
And so I drew this. And what's fucking mad? This is what I mean about, it's a con trick doing these pranks. You've only got a it's like putting on a temporary mind patch. It's like being a pickpocket. Mm-hmm. You just got to distract them for the time you're with them. They'll go away. And then they might go and talk to their agent going, oh yeah, this is blah, blah, blah. I was filming today and he ran at me with his ass to touch me. And the agent will go, sorry, they did what? And then it's suddenly reality will come and going, oh, something's fucked up.
So, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, it's just temporary.
But that's so interesting that you'll write the, you almost write storyboards, pictures, and to write out the, it's an interesting way to articulate your vision and your thoughts of it. So Lee, your video that I saw, that, you know, I guess went viral. I mean, I just love how you articulate yourself, man. And I love your tweets and all that shit. When did you do that video, that first video that sort of people, you know, saw this, you know, crazy British guy with a high-pitched accent cursing and screaming, you know, defending Israel? Was that, when was that? Do you remember?
Probably, I don't know, maybe about 5 days after everything started. No, actually a bit longer. Maybe about a week after. It was the first day where I thought, you know what, I need to, you know, I hadn't slept. You're sucked into this bullshit. You go into a kind of mania. It's horrific, the shit that's coming out. It's traumatic and horrible. And then it was the first day where I thought, you know what, you need to have a fucking break. You've got to get out. And so I went to go, like, climbing. You know, just sort of like indoor climbing. But then I thought, oh, fuck this. You know, I couldn't. I just sort of just made a video talking about the insanity of them. Just the conversation about the whole fucking cause of this is them slaughtering people and taking hostages. And so, so just deal with that first. First things first. This fucking, anyway, so it was just, it's just annoying that that wasn't being spoken about. But can I go back a bit earlier?
Go ahead.
So in Britain, we're like 6 years ahead of you in America of dealing with shit, because we had this shit with this guy, Jeremy Corbyn, who became leader of...
Who is he?
He became leader of the Labour Party. And so he wanted to become the prime minister of the country. And this is a guy, he fucking calls Hamas his friends. He called them once champions of social justice, right? He once went to, I forget whether it's in Tunisia, I think, he went to the fucking graves of the people who orchestrated the Munich massacre. And for your viewers who don't know, that was in the Olympics in Germany, where some Palestinian terrorists, I think the PFLP was the organization, they went and broke into the Olympic Village, where there's just athletes. They broke into where the Israelis were staying, fucking shot them, killed them. They fucking castrated one of them, you know, and shooting them. And it led to this, like, kidnap and hostage thing. And they all got fucking killed and blown up with grenades. This is just fucking slaughter and murder of athletes participating in a sport that's about universal transcending conflict. Mm-hmm. Jeremy Corbyn laid a fucking wreath at their grave. A wreath. He laid a fucking wreath.
And who was he? What was his political, what was his thing?
He's hard left, but he became leader of the main opposition party in the UK. Basically, I don't want to bore people, but basically the Labour Party brought in this new policy where anyone could become a member of the party by just paying like £3, which is like, I don't know, like a few dollars, right? Which meant that the system got gamed by extremists and hard left people who just said, right, I'll sign up. And they got this guy in. And it's just a populist talking about, you know, I mean, oh, you know, the bad, you know, power to the people. And he's just a horrible, horrible man. And it was, and the visceral hatred that boomed for Jews in Britain. So we had 5 years of being gaslit and passive aggressive people saying, what are you talking about? There's no anti-Semitism. Oh, you're just rich Jews, and you're just doing it because of Israel. And you're all, you know, you don't experience racism. You're all white. Jews are white. You don't experience violence. There's no violence against Jews. So every sort of thing, blah, blah, blah. And all this was going on. I was getting criminally harassed, my own personal story. I get abuse every day. I had someone harassing me through my website anonymously for 4 years, sending me the most horrific shit, saying, oh, you should be another Holocaust. Hamas are glorious freedom fighters. And like abusing my family. And I didn't know who it was. And it fucking affects your life. Like, even if you're kind of tough and resilient, you know, I'll be at like a family funeral, the morning of a funeral. I get fucking messages coming through saying your family are Nazis, right? Gets to you. I managed to find out the IP address of this guy. And then with some help of a charity, I managed to compel the internet service provider to tell us who it was. And then we brought a case against them and took them to court, and they got found guilty. But then when they got sentenced, They got fucking let off with no prison sentence, even though it transpired they'd done this, they'd been found guilty like three other times doing the same. And so then it was like, no, but then it's like, no, I'm not fucking taking this. And took it to the Court of Appeal and made a big fuss about it. And it got overturned. He got sent to prison for a year and a half. So that prick had to go into prison over Christmas. And he was a fucking little shit. He wouldn't have had fun.
Good.
And the attitude is, right, there's no gain, by the way. Not only did I lose 4 years, there's no gain in me having to hustle through some court case. It's only loss for me. I lose my time. I lose my peace.
Right.
I don't get money. I get fuck all. But the point is, and I mean this sincerely, and this is the attitude we have, whether you're someone powerful, you're some little racist troll online, you don't get to fucking slap us for free, right? We'll fucking make your, if you try and hurt our lives, we'll make your life worse than you ever can make ours. And you know what? We're unashamedly, we'll be cruel about it. We'll be fucking relentless and spiteful and fucking hurt you. Because why should we be the ones to have to walk away with all this toxic shit in us? We'll fucking hurt you, and I don't care who knows it. We're mean and relentless. The end.
Yeah. I mean, no, I get it all the time. I mean, that seems like the one you were getting was like really, really probably scary. And it fucking sucks. And I've gotten it before, you know, the last 3 weeks because of Trump shit. You know what I mean? But I get it. It's every day. It's literally every day. And, you know, to be honest with you, you know, I didn't grow up with any anti-Semitism. I never had any confrontations. I never had, you know, I might have heard certain things, but, you know, we're really sort of, you know, it became eye-opening. I've talked about this before, is from social media, from my DMs, and from not even the DMs, the open comments. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, the DMs are one thing, and they're like, whoa, they say some wild shit. And, but when you get the open comments, one thing we do, we've stopped doing it because I always get suspended. And I see you said you're getting suspended and all that shit. But me and my friend, we created this thing called the Shame Game. You would be a great special guest. You would be a fucking great. So the Shame Game is like Joe Schmo DMs me, fuck you, Michael Rappaport, you fucking Jew, your family should have burnt in the Holocaust, I hope you die, you fucking Jew. What we'll do is we'll gather like three or four or five of them. A lot of them, they're from open accounts, which is the craziest shit. So we'll get their pictures, we'll get as much information, we'll get, this is Jeff from, you know, South Dakota. Jeff works at this company. Here's a picture of Jeff's wife. And we'll roast them, but we'll put all their shit up online. And it's, the response we get is, people fucking love it. And we love it because it's so fucking funny. And then we put it, the only problem is that putting it online, it winds up getting my account, you know, blocked or suspended, or I've had all sorts of shit. But the joy that we get, and I just wish that there were secret cameras to find the people, to see their reactions, and we tag their family, we find their mothers, their grandmothers, who they work with, the people that are at their job, and it's a fucking joyous, joyous fucking thing. We haven't done it in a while, but I think we might have to do the the Hamas edition, because we've done, you know, like some, it's fun.
There's a little craze that went around Israel when this was all going on, they would someone would find Hamas supporters online. And just to remind people, Hamas are an Islamic fundamentalist organization. Their goal is to...
Say it slow. Say it fucking slow. Hamas, nice and slow.
So just a bit, Hamas, they're not freedom fighters. You can't be about freedom if you're an Islamic fundamentalist terror organization. There's no freedom in their goal, which is to create a global Muslim caliphate. There's no freedom if you're gay, who they fucking chuck off buildings. There's no freedom if you're an atheist, who they'll fucking murder. There's no freedom if you're an artist or a free thinker, because they'll drag you on the back of their fucking motorbike, pop your fucking skull open, right? There's no freedom if you're a woman. There's no freedom if you're a fucking Jew. So the idea these are freedom fighters, these are tyrants, okay? All they want is subjugation. And so there's this very funny, there was this craze in Israel where they'd find Hamas supporters online, pro-Hamas, and they would take their pictures. And they put like banners off them of like, I stand with Israel, I heart Israel. Do you know what I mean? And, there'd be like these two Hamas supporters together, these two guys, and they'd put like fucking pride flags on it and say like, our names are blah, blah, blah. and love is love. You should be able to love whoever you want. And it's all in Arabic, so that like their families and people are sort of seeing them. Do you know what I mean? So your shame game just reminded me of that. I am Rappaport
Podcast. We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It's called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It's an insider's look at the NBA and culture surrounding the league. John Wall, baby, needs no introduction. Every week, the five-time NBA All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA and what's going on now in the league. CJ will bring his A-list comedian buddies to keep it light and fire off some hoop takes. Plus, John Wall will be inviting current and former NBA players, friends, and teammates to join the show to give their unfiltered accounts of what's really going on in the league from a player's perspective. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts. There's a new way to bet on things outside of sports with Kalshi. Maybe you thought on the future of TikTok. Will Congress ban it? Or won't they? Will Taylor Swift's album win album of the year? Will Biden's approval rating go up? Will it go down? Or inflation? You can trade futures on all of that and make money if you're correct. You're smart. You know things. Bet on it. $20 bonus if you go to Kalshi.com/stereo. Spelled K-A-L-S-H-I and deposit $50. Kalshi.com/stereo. Get in the game. There is no guarantee of performance. An investor could lose their entire investment. Investment fees. iHeartMedia does not recommend any investments. See further disclosures at Kalshi.com.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit Bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
You know, like, I was up last night. It was hard to sleep. You know, the last few weeks have been so, you know, upsetting and demoralizing and eye-opening in a way. They've been eye-opening in not a positive way and frustrating. And, you know, social media and the news and the fake news and the sort of half news and the apologists, you know, what has been like, if, you know, like today, I'm sure it's probably changed from yesterday because, you know, when you talk about the LGBTQ and we talk about the queers for Palestine, and I don't understand how these, I don't want to call them apologists or fucking dumb fucks. You know, the poster ripping down. I don't like all that shit. Like, I'm like, it's so baffling to me. Like, forget what side you're on. If there's a kidnapped baby of, it could be of anything. People would never rip down the poster of a missing puppy or somebody giving piano lessons or a math tutor. But you rip down a poster of somebody who is kidnapped. It doesn't make any fucking sense to me. Like, all these things I just sort of rattled off. Like, what is it, like, in the front of your brain today that's been the most frustrating or, you know, just sort of, you know, where you're just, makes you pick up your phone?
So just to, then to be specific about what you've just been spoken about, this isn't overnight. This has been a deliberate, conscious strategy for years from people. I don't even want to call them pro-Palestine. They're anti-Israel people who want to destroy Israel and kill the Jews. They have consciously infiltrated so-called progressive movements and woke spaces and left-wing spaces, people who don't give a fuck about like freedoms, with one goal, is to just fucking manipulate them into becoming insane and anti-Semitic spaces, so that just to make life harder for Jews, and in the belief that they'll make it harder for Israel when shit kicks off. And that's what we're experiencing. Let me just give you an example. 6 years ago, 2017, it was the Washington, D.C. Dyke March. I don't know if you remember that. I heard about this story. So it's this lesbian march in D.C. And some Jews were stopped by the organizers and made to leave because they had a pride flag which had a Jewish Star of David on it. And they said, you've got to take that down. This is anti-Zionist space. That's imperialist. You're making Palestinians feel unsafe. You have to take it down. A Jewish symbol. And so there's been a conscious campaign to alienate, to ostracize, to gaslight, to shame, to bully Jews into not being welcome to space. And it's a dehumanization ritual that's been taking place for years to dehumanate people in all these spaces, to dehumanize us to them as not being worthy of empathy, as not being worthy of solidarity. Because anything that a community deems as toxic, that's what they'll say we are. If you're on the hard left, what's toxic to them are colonizers, imperialism. Jews are colonizers and imperialists. If some communities equate, let's say, whiteness with toxicity, what are Jews? Jews are white. Even though most Jews in the world don't have the same complexion as me, you go to fucking Israel, they don't look like me with a fucking ginger beard. You know, whatever is toxic about us, you know, it's just the same as the Nazis. They would call us, and they can contradict. Nazis would call us communists and capitalists at the same time. It's these extremists who just wanted to isolate us, and now we're reaping the benefits. That's how people can now look at a poster of a kidnapped baby and look at a baby's eyes and just see colonizer, white, toxic, capitalist, right winger, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's just gone on for years. And in response, all we can do, so it's like, I know it's overwhelming and we're massively outnumbered, but it's like, I try and tell Jews, do you know, if there's any people who should be comfortable being outnumbered and surrounded, it's us. You've got to learn to sit comfortably in that shit. It's just the way it is. It's character building. You know, it builds you to sort of stand up tall and not crumple. And you can be a lone voice. I'm not saying it's pleasant, but what choice do you have? And it feels overwhelming. And I'd say everyone's allowed to feel despondent now and then. I get, you know, I'll get depressed. I might wake up early thinking this is fucking horrible. And you just work out your system. I kind of just think of a kind of sports metaphors or game metaphor. Like, I'm a big fan of boxing. And so you just think of, like, in boxing, like, you could be up against the ropes the whole time. You could be getting fucked up. But as long as you keep your jab going, you've always got a puncher's chance. It's like one punch could turn everything around. How many times have you seen it in a fight? Do you know what I mean? So you've got to stay in the game, otherwise you won't make that moment. The less violent example is, I don't know, I haven't played in ages, but I used to enjoy playing backgammon. You know the game backgammon? That's such a brilliant game, but the lesson I always take away from backgammon is you can feel like you're fucked and you totally should lose. But if you actually hold your nerve and stick in there, you can flip that shit suddenly and go on to victory so quickly. And so it's about, I think people just need to feel comfortable in discomfort and don't panic, you know?
I agree. And I totally agree with you, and I know what you mean. And saying that doesn't mean that you don't have ups and downs and feels, you know, but I totally agree with what you're saying. Do you find, you know, I found in New York, you know, the Jewish people that I'm speaking to, people are freaked out, you know, to be honest with you. People are freaked out. Jewish people are freaked out. You know, Jewish people are nervous. Also, a lot of, you know, for me, you know, I don't know how much you know about, like, you know, my Trump shit. I consider myself an independent, you know, I don't consider myself a Democrat. I don't consider myself a Republican. I can't stand any of these motherfuckers. I don't trust any of these motherfuckers at all. But, you know, seeing and hearing the sort of butts and the, you know, well, we support Israel and there should be no violence or anti-Semitism, but, you know, like, I can't fuck with Joe Biden. I can't fuck with the butts. You know, I obviously nobody, it seems like if you say, you know, fuck Hamas, I've been deemed you support genocide. I've been deemed all these things. It seems like if you say fuck Hamas, free the hostages, somehow we're saying it's okay to kill civilians. Nobody wants to see any civilians killed, raped, of any race, creed, color, before Israel, after Israel, Africa, China, fucking, you know, Spain, places unknown, you know, fucking UFO. No one wants to see that shit. But when, you know, people are saying, you know, free the hostages, you know, let the people go. And then your this argument of ceasefire, like, what are we supposed to do? I know I'm just kind of ranting because it's so frustrating. But, you know, like, you know, this idea of a ceasefire, like ceasefire and do what with who? Like, do we sit down and have fucking bagels with these people? These are animals, not the Palestinian people, not the people of Gaza. Hamas is... these are fucking savage fucking animals. And the only thing they care about, the only thing they want, if anybody would take the fucking time to read their fucking manifesto, their charter, their hopes and dreams, is the destruction of all Jewish people and the obliteration of Israel. No one will take the fucking time to read the shit. They wrote it. It's what they live by. It's their fucking Ten Commandments. It's their fucking, you know, their Mamba mentality. Their Mamba mentality, to quote Kobe Bryant, is the destruction of all fucking Jews. And I don't understand how that correlates to being genocidal and all that stuff. These people came in, now it's 19 days ago, and raped, fucking, you know, did, we don't need to say what they've done, but we have to defend, you know, getting them back.
I think, so I'll pick out a couple of things from what you said. One is that I think a lot of people in the West, people can only visualize their mental universe and are projecting their values onto people who have a completely different mythic history, different cultural mythic reference points inspiring them. Hamas, if Martin Luther King had been at that kibbutz and said to Hamas, hey guys, stop for a minute, I have a dream of everyone, they would have cut his fucking head off. They would have cut his head off. If the fucking Beatles had been there and said, hey Hamas, come on, all you need is love, they would have fucking set fire to them. They're not coming from a civil rights background on Martin Luther King. These are people whose reference point is the Battle of Khaybar, which is some medieval battle where Muhammad and his armies just slaughtered a Jewish tribe. And they're chanting this on the streets of London. They don't have the same reference points. It's just a different society. So you have to stop imagining saying, well, you know, everyone deep down wants peace and love. No, they don't. They don't. I'm not saying Islamic fundamentalist extremists who fly into fucking Twin Towers, who fucking burn babies. They don't just want, oh, we just want an ordinary life and to come home from work. They don't. And you have to be honest about that and accept it. Which brings us on to the next thing, is you don't appease people like that. You can't negotiate with people like that. You can't reason with people like that. You cannot come to an accommodation with people like that. All you can do is oppose them and defeat them. And that's it. And I would apply that to the people in the West who are shilling for these lunatics and sticking up for them. Jews in America, and this is what you have to learn in England, there's a people-pleasing tendency that, for better or worse, a lot of Jews have done, because you're a minority in a violent non-Jewish world that has historically been very cruel to us. And it might create a people-pleasing instinct of saying, look, we don't want any trouble, we want to be reasonable, we're no trouble. And there's times where you need to recognize who is someone you can reason with and who is someone you just have to defeat. And you have to openly oppose them and defeat them. So if there's these people on university campuses fucking taking off posters, blocking Jewish kids in a library, smacking on a wall like it's some pogrom, these are not people that we want to win over. There isn't a fucking time. These are people you have to just oppose and say, fuck you. And you have to destroy their arguments publicly without shame and without holding back, because it isn't a debate. It's a war. They're at war with us. Whatever they say, if the color blue was if the whole world hated the colour blue, they'd be saying, oh, the Jews love the colour blue. And if later on that afternoon the world said, you know what, we hate the colour red, they'd be saying, do you know what, the Jews fucking love the colour red. So they will say whatever they can in any given moment that makes us seem toxic and makes people want to withdraw their empathy and solidarity. And so people need to realise this isn't a game, a fair intellect. You're not having an intellectual debate. They're just trying to fuck you and make you look shit in any situation. And so call them out. Do you know what I mean? And stop being on the defence the whole time. I know, like, whatever Israel's doing, Israel's a country that's set up from its founding saying, hey, we would like peace with all our neighbours. And it's done that ever since, despite all the atrocities committed against it, wants peace. But Hamas's founding charter says, hey, we want to kill every Jew on earth, not just in Israel, on earth. So it's like, people talk about disproportionality in the Middle East. Yeah, it's a fucking disproportionality in terms of who's reasonable wants peace. You can't reason with these lunatics. We didn't reason with the Nazis who wanted to exterminate us, and the world must not try and appease Hamas. And just talking of the Nazis, I looked at the other day Winston Churchill's famous speech. You know that speech where it goes, we will fight them on the beaches, we'll never surrender. You ever heard that? It was when the English armies were trapped in Dunkirk on the beaches surrounded by the Nazis. And it was like Britain's darkest hour, where it's like, well, if we don't get some of these soldiers back, we're fucked. And Churchill literally gave the speech, and in it, he recognised, he says, we know that there's some innocent people, I'm paraphrasing, he goes, we know that there's some people who were innocent who will get caught up in this, and we're sorry we can't protect them as much as we would like to. But if we don't stand up to this evil, then we're all fucked forever. And it's them who have created this situation. And Britain and the world had the emotional maturity and the intellectual honesty to realise, do you know what? There's a fucking war. There's fucking genocidal evil. War is acceptable. Civilian casualties are ugly and grim, but it happens. And it would be immoral to do nothing. It would have been pacifism against the Nazis would have been the most immoral, monstrous position anyone could take. Because all pacifism does is basically saying, let's let the most violent, psychopathic bullies do what the fuck they want. That's pacifism. And if we were to apply pacifism to what's going on in Israel, that's basically saying, let's let the most insane, psychopathic monsters, fucking paedophiles, who fucking rape children, raped old ladies, cut people's heads off, fucking cut fetuses out of bellies. Fucking my friend, God bless him, he's alive, he's okay, but his fucking family, his poor family, like, it's ugly what I'm going to say, right? But like, it's enough for people to know. His poor fucking family, two of the children, two girls were fucking killed whilst the parents were made to watch, and they fucking filmed the parents watching it and live streamed their reactions. This is just cruelty, degradation. And here's the difference between the Nazis. The fucking Nazis tried to hide their crimes from the world. When Britain and America and the Russians, who were our allies in the Second World War, were getting close to the concentration camps, the Nazis were fucking trying to destroy evidence. They fucking tried to destroy the gas chambers because they wanted to hide it. But these Hamas, they fucking filmed it and live stream it and share it to the world. Why? Why? Because they're not ashamed. They think that setting fire to a pile of Jewish babies represents the best work they could do. It's like and imagine a skateboarder would put online because they think, yeah, that's a wicked trick I've done. They've put online killing Jews because they think, look at this, fucking like that. These are psychos, man. You don't appease that shit.
I know. I totally understand what you're saying. So your friend went through this. That's fucking horrible,
it's
man.
It's worse than that. This poor fucker, like, God bless him, he's a fucking hero. Fucking over a decade ago, a family member of his, a young girl, got fucking blown up by a Hamas suicide bomb in Jerusalem. So this poor family have been touched twice now. And some of them are kidnapped. And this is going, and it's not just him. There's, like, you've got to remember, there's 1,400 people have been slaughtered. They're still finding dead bodies they never found, literally, like, what, 20 days later? You know what I mean? It's like, and it's grim and we should feel it, but it's just like, we just need to, yeah, anyway, you just got to, we're here. We didn't choose to be the ones here, but we're here. And so it's up to us to oppose it and not get overwhelmed by thoughts of the bigger picture of ultimate victory. You just fucking keep moving forward yard by yard. You fight the little battle in front of you today. Don't worry about the end of the war. You just fight, you deal with today. And you take a little loss, fine. You're not going to win everything. You might lose 10 times in a row. Just keep going forward and get a little victory and fucking enjoy your win. And that's all people can do in life in general. You just don't get overwhelmed by the big picture, because that can send you into paralysis like a rabbit. You just get overwhelmed. Just focus on today's battle, you know? I am Rappaport Podcast.
We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It's called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It's an insider's look at the NBA and culture surrounding the league. John Wall, baby, needs no introduction. Every week, the five-time NBA All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA and what's going on now in the league. CJ will bring his A-list comedian buddies to keep it light and fire off some hoop takes. Plus, John Wall will be inviting current and former NBA players, friends, and teammates to join the show to give their unfiltered accounts of what's really going on in the league from a player's perspective. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts. There's a new way to bet on things outside of sports with Kalshi. Maybe you thought on the future of TikTok. Will Congress ban it or won't they? Will Taylor Swift's album win album of the year? Will Biden's approval rating go up? Will it go down? Or inflation? You can trade futures on all of that and make money if you're correct. You're smart. You know things. Bet on it. $20 bonus if you go to Kalshi.com/stereo. Spelled K-A-L-S-H-I and deposit $50. Kalshi.com/stereo. Get in the game. There is no guarantee of performance. An investor could lose their entire investment. Investment fees. iHeartMedia does not recommend any investments. See further disclosures at Kalshi.com.
Mother's Day is coming, and mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Well, I really appreciate talking to you.
Pleasure.
Sorry. I'm gonna leave it. I would love to talk to you again and you know, and stay in touch with you. I mean, I feel like I would love to meet you, man.
No, look, well, I'll be out soonish, I hope. So I'll come and say hello. I don't mind the East Coast. Not so keen on Los Angeles and the West Coast being on there. I don't think it's for me.
Yeah.
That's why I'm still in London.
Yeah, I get it. I don't mind LA. LA's all right. You know, it's I was out there for so long. I think it's you make the best of what it is. You know, there's good people there. Obviously, there's good weather there. You know, that's a whole other conversation. But you seem like a New Yorker. You know, like you're a city person.
I found it really inhumane not being able to walk anywhere. Like you couldn't have any physical contact with your location.
I agree. That was my biggest problem with Los Angeles. You can walk, but like if you want to go get a coffee, it's not just like you're going around the corner or three blocks. You're going for a fucking, you know, it's like a walk. It's like an exercise.
It's a fucking march. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not just like a casual walk. Like you're going, and then you don't want to walk back because you're like, I'm drinking. But yeah, that's the biggest problem with it. But I'm definitely a New Yorker. You said you're a boxing guy. Real quick, Tyson Fury,
yeah,
Francis Ngannou are fighting this weekend. Are you taking that fight seriously? Just do you want to make a prediction? Because I know you said you like boxing. I don't want to go down the boxing rabbit hole, but I love Tyson Fury, and I was at when he fought the first Deontay Wilder fight, and watched him get up off the fucking canvas when I thought he was dead. And, you know, being at a Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder fight was like, talk about like a mishmash of crazy fucking testosterone, you know, lunatics. But do you have any prediction for that fight on Saturday? Because I'm predicting the upset, the shocker of all shockers. Francis Ngannou is going to knock out Tyson Fury. And I've bet against Tyson in the past, and he always fucking... but I just feel like I think he's taking this fight lightly, or maybe he's not. Maybe he's just playing possum. But are you paying attention to that fight at all?
No, I'd want him to win, but literally only because the Fury-Usyk fight... Like, it just has to happen. Because, like, the heavyweight division is so frustrating. The fights that should happen don't happen. And when they do happen, they happen too late. They should, like, they're not happening when people are in their prime and it should be happening. And Usyk and Fury, that's the fight I want to see and what I'm looking forward to. Because in my opinion, they're the most intelligent fucking boxers out there. And more than any, I know. Like, of course, boxing's thuggish and that, but for me, it's a really intelligent sport. At its best, it's
Tyson Fury is one of the most.
Yeah, and at its best, boxing for me is like watching two brains circling each other and seeing whose brain. It's like two brains wearing gloves. And more than any fight, Fury's so fucking smart in the ring. Usyk's so fucking smart, and I just would love to see that battle of intelligence going on. Which obviously, Fury's got the physical advantage, and Usyk is, even though they've been low shots, he doesn't like getting hit in his gut or belly. I don't know if it's so possible. That's the real fight I want to see. But do you know why I love boxing as well? Is in all sports, actually, I love how personality translates into how you play. I fucking love that. Like some of the greatest sportsmen, like Fury's a very fast brain. He's clearly a showman. And that comes there from the ring. And that's why it's exciting to watch. My favourite ever footballers or soccer is a guy called Paul Gascoigne. And he was a cocky, arrogant, silly mischief maker and clown. And so because of that, when he was on the pitch, he had the cockiness and the confidence to think, do you know what? I'm an attention seeker. And so I fucking want this crowd to be loving me and get them excited. Anyway, so I think Fury and Usyk, that's the fight for me.
I hear you. That's going to be a great fight. And I mean, Fury's unbelievable. He's unfucking believable. He's unbelievable. I wish he was fighting at a better time for heavyweights across the board. Because I think, I don't want to go down, I feel like the heavyweight division, you know, it's like the guys that, you know, Muhammad Ali, Larry Holmes, these guys were like 220 pounds. Now a heavyweight champion is like 250, 260. You know, 6'8". So it's a different thing than what I grew up watching. You know, the guys are just, they're like, you know, the Klitschko's started it. They're like these fucking rock'em sock'em robots. So I think that really changed it. But I mean, he's sick. And I mean, he's so likable and such an incredible story. And the father and they're characters. They are fucking characters. The father is fucking the best.
It's just such a... I mean, it's the only truly visceral sport left, other than actually. So I got quite into ice hockey. So when I was a kid growing up, me and my brother loved this movie called Slapshot. Have you ever heard of it?
Come on, man. A fucking unbelievable. The Hanson brothers, Paul Newman.
Yeah. So no one in England knows it, but me and my brother, we saw this film, Slap, Paul Newman. Fucking hilarious, but like a real movie with this sort of backdrop of this working class meal town struggling. So it feels like a proper movie, but it's fucking funny and it's goofball without being goofball. And so for those who don't know, it's about this struggling team in a town that is struggling. And then they get this new manager who gets these psycho players to join these three brothers. And then the most violent lunatics you've ever seen on the ice. And all of a sudden, people start coming to watch it. And they decide, you know what, fuck it. Our team's going to close at the end of the year. Let's go out in a blaze of violent glory. And it's fucking funny. So when I was working on Who Is America, I was in Washington, D.C. And I had one evening off. And so I went to watch the Washington Capitals play. And it was my first time. And I fucking loved it, man. I had everything I want. There was a fight. I saw a player. This is how amazing I was. I saw one player. He got in trouble because he didn't fight, right? Where he did this thing where he went out. He made out as if he was going to throw off his mittens, but he didn't. So the other guy hit him because he thought, oh, if I do that, he'll get sent off. But the ref said, no. I saw what you did. You can fucking go off for not fighting. So like, what an amazing game where you get in trouble for not fighting, you know?
The only sport, the only piece of entertainment in the world where fighting, I mean, this is like, these are like assaults. They condone it. They support it. And if you don't do it, you get a penalty. That's crazy.
And it was all, but I love the honor. I just love the honor code of it. Like, cause you, they're fighting, the whole crowd's going fight. And one of them gets his ass fucking whooped. But he doesn't feel any shame or humiliation. It's just like, all right, it's part of the game. Let's carry on. I really like that. It's just...
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. I wish I loved hockey more. I loved it when I was a kid, but I've lost... But when I do watch it, sometimes I watch the playoffs, I'm like, it's awesome. And I've been to, you know, live games at Madison Square Garden in L.A., and when you're watching it live, it's like, holy fucking shit. It's such a fast-paced... There's no let-up. It's a great sport.
Yeah.
And anyway, Lee, yeah. I appreciate you taking the time, and I would love to meet you in person. And I could tell you this, you know, I'm sure you're probably seeing it online, but the videos and the toughness and the humility and the humor that you've brought, you know, supporting Jewish people in Israel. I know, you know, the people that have seen it that I've shared with, you know, people really, you know, appreciate it. And I know it's needed. And I'm sure you have a lot of people over here that, you know, would articulate. I'm articulating on their behalf. I know people really appreciate what you're doing. Thank you. I do.
Thank you. Let me just finish. I just want to finish saying one thing. And I've said this in a video just to make it clear to people watching. I'm pretty sure I'm in line with most Jewish people in the world. I don't mind if there's a Palestine. I don't mind if there's 1,000 Palestinian states, as long as their goal isn't the destruction of the one Jewish state in the world. That's all we want. Just one place in the land to which our origins are indigenous, and just to get on with it. We've got no issue with the Palestinian people. We just don't want to be obliterated, which, to be honest, I think that's quite a reasonable request.
I totally agree. And say the thing you said about the flag. Articulate the thing you said about...
It's just frustrating. Like, you get lots of people saying, oh, Israel's a racist state, ethno-fascist state. And it's like, guys, just grow up for 5 minutes, right? If you look at the flags of the world, there's like 100 countries with a flag that's got an Islamic crescent on it. And there's like 100 countries that have got a Christian cross. But there's just one country in the world, one country with one little tiny Jewish star, and that's too much for people. That's got to go. That's fucking too much. That's too ethnic. Listen to yourselves. Realize the hypocrisy. Realize that you don't even see your own anti-Semitism because it's so pervasive in the non-Jewish world. It's the air you breathe. Okay? So just grow up. Stop applying double standards to Jews and Israel that you don't apply to other people. You don't tell America when they experience a terrorist atrocity, they can't protect themselves. You don't tell England they can't. You don't tell any country they can't. So don't be silly. Just be honest. Stop playing games. Israel's just had 1,400 civilians massacred, filmed online, humiliated, kidnapped. They've killed fucking babies. Of course they're going to respond. So, yeah, the end.
All right, Cooley, I appreciate it. And I'm looking forward to meeting you, and keep doing your shit and keep creating and keep writing and keep, you know, I can't wait to see what you do creatively also.
Thank you. And you, man. Take care. Bye.
Boom. Thank you so much for listening to the I Am Rappaport Stereo podcast. You should definitely follow Lee Kern at Lee Kern on social media. I appreciate you taking the time. Tell a friend to tell a friend about the I Am Rappaport Stereo podcast, the world's most disruptive podcast. Miles Jordan, a.k.a. the Bleach Brothers, take me out here with something real nice. Take me out here with something real loud. But most importantly, end this museum-quality I Am Rappaport Stereo podcast with something real funky. I'm out! There's a new way to bet on things outside of sports with Kalshi. Maybe you thought on the future of TikTok. Will Congress ban it? Or won't they? Will Taylor Swift's album win album of the year? Will Biden's approval rating go up? Will it go down? Or inflation? You can trade futures on all of that and make money if you're correct. You're smart. You know things. Bet on it. $20 bonus if you go to Kalshi.com/stereo. Spelled K-A-L-S-H-I and deposit $50. Kalshi.com/stereo. Get in the game. There is no guarantee of performance. An investor could lose their entire investment. Investment fees. iHeartMedia does not recommend any investments. See further disclosures at Kalshi.com.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.